This is the American Ag Network Week in Review. In the show today, Rusty Halverson gets us caught up on the week's top news.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue told reporters at a DTN summit in Chicago this past week that he's optimistic following the talks at the G20 summit in Argentina over the weekend, but he also acknowledged that significant retaliatory tariffs by Canada, China, and Mexico remain in place.
I think everyone's waiting to see exactly what was said and flesh out the details of that very important promising announcement between President Xi and President Trump. I've been talking with our negotiators, and those are the issues that are going to be fleshed out here in the next few days. We would love to restore the trade. Our farmers have borne the brunt of retaliatory tariffs, and I'd love to see them removed.
Steve Nicholson of Rabobank.
The tariffs are still in place for Mexico, also for China, and so U.S. agriculture hasn't benefited from tariffs. And we probably should just talk. I mean, as an economist, we don't like tariffs because it's an externality put on open markets that disrupts markets. And in this case, as we've seen here in the U.S., and we'll pick on soybeans and pork in particular, has really really dampened the prices. And I'm trying to be diplomatic, really depressed us in the sense that prices have come down. And so tariffs are not a good thing for agriculture, and I think you would, could argue, and I would argue that for any good or service that's traded back and forth between countries or even between you and me, I mean, we don't want to put a tariff. We want to decide what's the value of the product or service we're buying, and then you will pay me for that service, or I'll pay you for that good, and then in exchange I'll get that good. And so you put a tariff on that, it disrupts the whole process, and I think that's what's really got in the craw of agriculture, and I think in particularly and also in the craw of agriculturists or agriculture economists and economists, is that this is not helping the economy. And you just look at what's happened with NAFTA and the growth in the Mexican economy, the growth in the Canadian economy, and the growth of the U.S. economy, and how that has added job, has added not only money to the economy but added jobs to the economy. And tariffs are not doing that. They're doing just the opposite.
Brian Keel with the Farmers for Free Trade.
China's harder because it's so complex and there's so many layers to it. I think we want to ask that the trade war be de-escalated. We're doing long-term damage to our soybean farmers. This is not a light switch that gets turned on and off. We're losing market share, and a lot of long-term damage has already been done. So we can't afford to have this drag into 2019.
China's statement after the G20 meeting last weekend was different from the White House. Chinese officials agreed the country would buy more U.S. products, but they did not mention it would immediately restart buying agricultural products, as the U.S. stated. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue noted that when it comes to dealing with China, the country has made promises in the past that it has failed to keep. The foreign ministers of China and North Korea held talks in Beijing Friday amid a lack of progress in international efforts to persuade North Korea to halt its nuclear weapons program. China was also preparing to launch a groundbreaking mission early Saturday to soft land a spacecraft on the far side of the moon, China hoping to be the first country to ever do so. Nick Giordano with the National Pork Producers is eager to see a trade resolution between the U.S. and China.
Bottom line is the U.S. and China are talking. We hope sooner rather than later they get things straightened out so we can get out from under this retaliation. And more than that, we've given this administration a roadmap as to how we increase U.S. pork exports to China. I mean, we've got the 50% punitive tariff, but we had some impediments before all this started. We'd like to get those cleared away. We've been talking throughout the course of the year with the administration. So, look, right now we're really behind the eight ball, but hopefully, there's the potential for us to really come out ahead. A number of years ago, pork was 16% of the consumer price index in China. Not sure what it is today, but it's significant. They eat a heck of a lot of pork there, and the U.S. pork industry could single-handedly put a dent in the U.S.-China trade imbalance. So we're hopeful. It's taken a toll on us. Dr. Hayes of Iowa State calculates that this year based on an estimated harvest of 125 million hogs. This has hit us to $8 an animal, $1 billion. When you compound that with Mexico and the fact that we're on that retaliation list, it's been a really tough year for the industry.
Meanwhile, China continues to report new cases of African swine fever.
There's no question that ASF is impacting global markets. I think it's pretty clear that it's putting upward pressure on global markets. They're having a very difficult time containing it. No one knows for sure the extent to which it's spread, but obviously it's significant. It's impacting markets. When you look at the fact that we're on three retaliation lists, two China lists and one Mexico list, and we had record pork production this year, it's nothing short of a miracle. I mean, even though it's been a very bad year for producers, it could have been a lot worse. Export demand is robust. There's obviously some displacement going on with product from a number of other countries. Europe supplies there, Canada in particular, others. So that even though we're not selling what we sold, for example, in 2017 to China, there is an impact on markets. And, of course, bottom line is we're hopeful that the U.S.-China trade dispute gets cleared up sooner rather than later so we can get back to selling China. And finally, to your point about potential, look, China is the single largest opportunity for pork in the world. It's the largest pork producing, but it's also the largest pork consuming country in the world. Our costs are significantly lower than theirs. I think people know that in terms of quality and safety, we're second to none. We're affordable. Great opportunity for us there long term, although going to be bumps in the road, and obviously we're kind of caught in a ditch off on the side of the road today.
Conagra Brands on Friday said it expects to incur charges of up to $440 million on its plan to integrate Pinnacle Foods. Conagra in October closed on its acquisition of Pinnacle, which the company unveiled in June. Federal investigators are turning up more clues in the latest E. coli outbreak linked to romaine lettuce, though officials still can't identify a single source of the illnesses. The CDC had added 9 people to its tally of the people sickened by the bacteria as of Friday, December 7th. Officials are using new technology to help speed up efforts to track salmonella illnesses to their source. Acting Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety, Carmen Rottenberg.
They're able to make those associations through the use of whole genome sequencing technology in a way that I think previously you might have thought that 5 people from one state and 4 people from another state and 3 people somewhere else are getting sick, but they were not necessarily seen as being all related.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue was slated to be at Pearl Harbor on Friday, attending the National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day commemoration. USDA reporter Gary Crawford filed this report.
We have witnessed the severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by...
A live broadcast from Hawaii 77 years ago, December 7th, 1941, which the next day President Roosevelt called...
A date which will live in infamy.
It began this country's earnest entry into World War II, which spurred the Agriculture Department to start programs to boost food production. And USDA historical expert Ann Efland says for farmers it wasn't easy. First, young farmers were being drafted off the farms into the army. Secondly,
there were restrictions on use of rubber and steel, which affected use of farm machinery.
But farmers did manage to boost production, helped by the Victory Garden movement for non-farmers.
To encourage, even in urban areas, producing your own vegetables and fruits in particular.
It worked so well, President Roosevelt was able to tell the nation 2 years later,
there is enough food today for all of us, and enough left over to send to those who are fighting with us.
And that, many believe, helped win the war for the Allies. In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
A recent report from Reuters News cited unnamed sources indicating that the EPA was set to freeze its small refinery waiver program pending a review by the agency and the Department of Energy. Biofuels groups began to raise questions about the program over the past year after reports surfaced that waivers were granted to large refining companies reporting billions of dollars in profits. Bob Dineen of the Renewable Fuels Association.
There have been some rumors that they've put the waiver process on hold. They have not. They do have five or six waivers for 2019 already in front of them, and we're certain that they will get more. They are taking a closer look, I think, over the criteria that they use to grant waivers, which we think is healthy. You know, the RFA and Growth Energy and some others are suing EPA because we think that the criteria that they've used over the past 2 years, not prior to that, but since Scott Pruitt was EPA administrator or during that time, was completely inappropriate. And so we are hopeful that the courts will, correct what was obviously an egregious abuse of EPA's authority. But even ahead of that, I think the EPA is recognizing it's vulnerable in the court case, and it better take a look at just how it has been evaluating these waiver requests, and perhaps we'll see some change. I think that would be extraordinarily positive.
The EPA reportedly granted 48 hardship waivers in 2016 and 2017.
They began signing waivers, and a 15-billion-gallon requirement became a 13-billion-gallon demand after they destroyed 2.25 billion gallons of RFS demand. So we are cautiously optimistic that with RINs trading as low priced as they are, less than a dime today, there's certainly no justification for continuing to grant waivers, and that Andy Wheeler, not being Scott Pruitt, will have a more sanguine approach to his statutory obligations with this waiver authority, and won't hand them out like their candy, and we'll have a program that means something.
The EPA recently released its 2019 renewable volume obligations under the RFS. Growth Energy CEO Emily Score saying the latest EPA rule is a missed opportunity to correctly account for billions of gallons of ethanol lost to refinery exemptions. Until those lost gallons are taken into account, she said it's two steps back for every step forward. American Coalition for Ethanol CEO Brian Jennings.
This is a good start on paper, right? It's an increase for cellulosic biofuel, a fairly meaningful increase. It's an increase for advanced biofuel. It's an increase in total renewable fuel for 2019. And on paper, it maintains the 15 billion gallons that is so important to us on the conventional side, which is typically filled by corn ethanol. But of course, there's a but, and the but is the reality of these small refinery waivers, which we've talked about ever since Scott Pruitt sort of helped refineries get this backdoor opportunity to escape their responsibilities under the RFS. As long as EPA does nothing to rectify that situation, meaning reallocate those waived gallons, more than 2 billion gallons worth, to the remaining refiners in the system so that the overall obligations are met, we don't have confidence that 2019 is going to turn out any better for us on the RFS side. We have to see some remedy from this EPA in order to tell you and our members and others that we have confidence in these numbers.
Meanwhile, the EPA is asking a federal court to stay litigation challenging agency guidance that exempts livestock operations from reporting releases of hazardous air emissions to local and state emergency officials. The agency contends the case should be put on hold while it works on a rule that will expand the exemption and make it permanent. And Morocco has agreed to lift its ban on U.S. beef and beef products, giving American suppliers their first chance to profit from a free trade agreement between the two countries. That decision, which follows Morocco's opening to U.S. poultry back in August, was announced by U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue. That's what's happening in agriculture. I'm Rusty Halverson.
This has been the American Ag Network Week in Review. I'm Sabrina Hill for Rusty Halverson and myself. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week.